I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. The governor of New York wants to ban fracking for natural gas in his state, while the outgoing governor of Maryland wants to allow it here and regulate it. We'll take a look at that story, along with another important environmental issue, poultry farming, pollution, and the Chesapeake. And Rona Cabell of the Bay Journal joins us for the second hour of today's show. Up front, two new Republican county executives, Barry Glassman of Harford County and Alan Kittleman of Howard County, talk about their plans for the year ahead, including promises to repeal the stormwater management fees mandated by the state to curtail runoff into the bay, but derided by critics as a rain tax. First, the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day on WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Frederick and Hagerstown, WYPO over on the Eastern Shore in Ocean City, and streaming live online through WYPR.org. Midday on the Bay today in the second hour of our show. Rona Cabell joining us again from the Chesapeake Bay Journal to follow three stories. A federal judge in Baltimore comes down hard, really hard, on a Chesapeake Bay rockfish thief. The governor of New York bans fracking. And Maryland's governor-elect Larry Hogan claims new anti-pollution rules will decimate poultry farming on the Eastern Shore. Rona Cabell joining us in the second hour of the show after the news at 1. In this hour, we get to know two new county executives, both Republicans, Alan Kittleman of Howard County and Barry Glassman of Harford County. We'll ask about their plans for the year ahead, their impressions of Governor-elect Hogan, and what they've done in the first 2 weeks on the job. Joining us now is the new Harford County executive, Barry Glassman. Welcome to Midday.
Dan, how are you?
I'm good. It's nice to get to speak with you, and belated congratulations on your election. You've been in office, actually, about 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks. So how's it going so far?
It's going well. It's been kind of a whirlwind because unlike the state, most county charters bring their county executives in on December 1st. So we had less than a month to get our cabinet together and some initial legislation and executive orders and some folks hired. So it has been it was a busy November. Most of my staff missed Thanksgiving, and we worked all weekend to get the inaugural ready. But we've hit the ground running, and we feel pretty good so far.
How's the fiscal picture look in Harford County? I asked that question right off the bat because that's on everybody's mind as we head into the end of December. January comes the General Assembly session, and we're already getting projections on the state budget picture, not looking so great. How do things look in Harford County?
Well, we've kind of anticipated that in November, and actually during the summer, even during the campaign, we did a lot of reviewing of the county's revenue projections and debt service and so forth. So we kind of anticipated this. I think the handwriting's been on the wall. In the spring there was a downgrade in revenue from the comptroller's office, and then we got some November projections. So we are down about $3.6 million on our income tax projections for the next year, and also we've got some additional debt service and the last year of the teacher pension transfer that came from the state to the county. So we're above water, but we don't really have a lot of cushion left at this point. Thus, one of the first things we did is offer a retirement incentive program to begin to downsize the workforce a little bit.
One of the things you must be concerned about is state aid to the counties and specifically to Harford County. What about that? Have you got a reading on that yet?
No, we had breakfast with the governor last week and talked about some of the things we were concerned about. To tell you the truth, and as you know, I was in the legislature 16 years, mm-hmm. So probably over the last 12 years we've seen a gradual reduction of state aid to counties. I mean, really the big area left is school construction local aid on the education side. Really, there's not too much they can do to us at the state level to a local government. Now, they can affect, say, our DDA, our disability folks, the amount of reimbursements to the ARC. A lot of our community partners that receive state aid, now they could be in a difficult position, and thus they usually come to the county to make up the difference. Mm-hmm. So they've gotten to the point that they'll be reaching out into a lot of our community partners, but to tell you the truth, there's not a whole lot left after education that they can do to a county, particularly in Harford County's circumstance. We are concerned about school aid. Harford County's always met its maintenance of effort, but our teachers have not had raises for about 5 years, and we still have some outstanding school construction needs. So that is an area that worries me as far as education support.
And road construction, too. I would think that would be a concern in a county that has a lot of roads and a lot of folks
right.
who commute every day.
Well, and as you know, so for the last 3 or 4 years, we have not received any local highway user funds mm-hmm. back from the state gasoline tax. Now, that's an area where I do think that we have an opportunity to get some help for a rural road program, our local roads. I do think you'll see one of the large, either the Red Line or the Purple Line, one of those large capital projects, I think, will probably have to not move forward so some of those funds can be returned to local jurisdictions. So I think, you know, it's sort of a crystal ball being in Annapolis, but I do see where, you know, the trade-off may be one of those projects will have to be sacrificed, and the governor who had a lot of support from rural Maryland is maybe going to use one of those projects to send some help back to rural and suburban counties. So that could be a trade-off that you see happen over the next 3 to 6 months once we get into the legislative session.
Barry Glassman, when you were in Annapolis, you opposed the stormwater fee, the stormwater remediation fee for Baltimore and the other nine largest jurisdictions, including Harford County, and you want to see this fee repealed in Harford County, is that right?
Yes, I've introduced legislation which will be heard, I think, in early January by the county council that will repeal the rain tax in Harford County. Although I must say we're going to look at our capital project program that we currently have and redesignate some funds and also do some flexible planning with folks in the county so that we can still meet our goals. And I think there's another area where I think you'll see the Senate president and the governor come together and say, listen, we don't really care how you do it. We're not going to mandate the fee. The EPA requirements are still going to be there for your water quality improvement plans. And so they're going to expect us to do it. They're not going to force us to raise a fee to do it. I think some jurisdictions will keep their fee if that works for them, but I think the mandate will go away. So we feel like we're on pretty good footing here in the county to keep moving ahead with our goals.
You know, I don't understand how we accomplish it in Maryland in this area, the areas that we're talking about, the city and the nine largest jurisdictions outside the city, accomplish the goals of meeting the EPA requirements without paying for it. I don't see it.
Well, you're going to pay for it. I mean, we're going to pay. If you don't do it through a fee, you're going to pay through your property taxes through the general fund. Although I do think when new business partners come into a county with a development project, I think if there's enough flexible planning by MDE and the other state regulatory bodies, that, in fact, the developer can meet those goals with new design standards and so forth. So it will probably cost them more money to do it that way, but I think it's a way that you can meet the goal without having to spend county money or have an additional fee on residents. We also are in the Conowingo Dam fallout on the Susquehanna River. I do think for counties that are in that watershed that we should be included in any merger discussions, relicensing of the dam and so forth, to potentially see if that impact could relate to some assistance for counties along that watershed to reach their EPA goals also. So I just think it's going to take a combination of things in the toolkit to do it. But I think everyone agrees, and I know, Dan, you might not necessarily agree, but the rain tax and the way that thing rolled out was kind of a disaster from the get-go. I mean, municipalities were exempt from it yet. So I may have a car dealer in Bel Air proper, in town, that did not pay the rain tax, but 1,000 feet down Bel Air Road, I had a car dealer that had to pay, you know, $3,000 a year. So it really was rolled out in an uneven, disproportionate way that made it kind of unworkable.
But the state didn't do that. That was the county council and your predecessor, right?
Well, the state did it in the enabling. I mean, the state and MDE laid out the parameters in the enabling legislation, and they, and let's face it, larger municipalities and municipal governments were kind of exempt from that as part of the political agreement to move ahead with a mandated fee. So there's a lot of inside politics even when the state enables a new fee.
And let's talk about the principle here just for a moment.
Sure.
I mean, as Harford County executive, first of all, I need to ask, do you think you should be still calling it a rain tax, which is a term embraced by conservatives, people on the right, who wanted to ridicule the idea that we had to raise money to remediate all this stormwater, filthy stormwater that rushes into the Chesapeake Bay eventually?
Well, I think, you know, and actually when we filibustered the bill in the Senate, we weren't smart enough to call it a rain tax back then. We were still calling it the stormwater fee. So other folks picked up the moniker of rain tax, and I think it began to get a life of its own. But listen, I think the real difference here is that, just for example, nutrient management for 20 years through the state of Maryland, through voluntary programs where farmers, the state, locals work together to meet goals without necessarily doing a fee or a mandated regulation. And I think that's where we kind of lost sight. And I think you'll see Harford County and most of these jurisdictions meet the goal and move ahead with their watershed protection plans without having the fee. So I think the fee began to take a life of its own, and the fact that we can do goals and meet our requirements without the fee, I think counties can do. Now, counties that think they can't, you know, they're free to raise a fee and do it that way.
So you
but I think
you
the real test will be at the end of the day, in fact, whether these localities can reach their goals. And in Harford County, we've looked at the program and the capital outlay that we need to do, and we think we can reach those EPA goals.
And you think you can do it with funds that you already have that's in the county budget,
yes.
General fund. Okay.
Yes, yes.
Let me ask you about another idea you have about raising a tax on hotel rooms by 6%. And why are you proposing that, and what would you do with the revenue from that?
Right. Harford County is the only jurisdiction in the state of Maryland that does not currently have a hotel lodging tax, and we may be one of the only jurisdictions on Interstate 95. We've come to the point where that's a revenue that we're not capturing from folks that are traveling through Harford County, and we've developed a great museum tourism program along with sports marketing. Our Cedar Day Sports Complex is loaded every weekend with lacrosse, soccer tournaments, and so forth. So we've grown to the point where we need to capture that revenue of folks coming through and traveling down I-95. What we're going to do with it is similar to a model used around the country and use that revenue. Part of our restructuring, we're going to take tourism out of county government and move it to the private sector. And the group's called Visit Harford, which is a destination marketing organization. And we're going to funnel those funds to them and let them use the synergies with the local business community, museums, all our tourist attractions here at the top of the bay as we, you know, become one of the larger tourism spots in the state of Maryland. So I think it's a good thing. It really captures a lost revenue, and it also helps me by kind of downsizing government a little bit and putting it out into the private sector.
Barry Glassman, I want to thank you for your time today and invite you to come back on our show from time to time as we check in with you and other county executives to see, you know, how it's going. You're new in this office, although you're not new to politics. You're new in this office, as our colleagues in other jurisdictions, and we'll be inviting you all on the show to hear from you from time to time. So,
Dan, I'd love to do that, yeah. and maybe during sessions a good time when we see what we have on the chopping block, and then we can we'll talk about that then, all right?
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Barry Glassman, the new county executive in Harford County. This is Midday. Dan Rogers here. A short break. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Midday as we continue conversations with new county executives. We just heard from Barry Glassman, the new county executive in Harford County, a Republican who was elected in November, and now Alan Kittleman. Like Barry Glassman, put in a lot of time in the Maryland legislature and then decided to run for county executive of his home county, Howard County. So, Alan Kittleman, nice to have you back on the show. It's been a little while since we had you here.
It's great to be with you, Dan. I look forward to our conversation.
How do you think working in the legislature for how many years?
I was 10 years in the state Senate and then 6 years on the county council before that.
Yeah. How do you think, but I was curious about, I meant to ask Barry Glassman about preparing to become county executive after being in the legislature, because in the legislature, you were used to wrestling with these budget deficits that come up almost every year, it seems like, in recent years, having to wrestle with that and then to tell county executives maybe they're not going to get as much aid as they had been used to in the past.
Right. Well, I think being a former state legislator is helpful also just in the relationships you have with people in the state. There's certainly an awful lot of push down from the state, as we've talked about it already, and as you talked about with County Executive Glassman. So having that experience and knowing how it works down there and knowing the people who are the influencers down there, I think is helpful. And also just seeing how the state aid is doled out and knowing what committees are important to deal with. And
so you know what to expect or maybe not to expect this year.
You do. And certainly knowing a governor like Hogan well, I certainly have a good relationship with him, so it's going to be helpful as well.
Did you know him at all before he decided to jump in and run for governor?
Sure. When I first was appointed to the state Senate in 2004, he was appointment secretary for Governor Ehrlich.
Right.
So I knew him back then, and I certainly have seen him between then and now. So, yep, and I certainly saw him an awful lot on the campaign trail.
I didn't talk to you. I haven't had a chance to speak to you since the election in November. First of all, congratulations
Thank
on
you.
Your election.
Thank you.
So what did you make of this election? Let's talk a little bit of politics before we talk about government here. What did you think of Larry Hogan's campaign versus Anthony Brown's campaign? Why do you think Maryland opted for Larry Hogan?
I think people did want to change. I think that Larry basically talked about the need for economic change. Larry didn't focus on social issues, and I think a lot of the social issues have been resolved. And that's one of the reasons I was on your show previously.
Yeah, we talked about same-sex marriage
What,
2 or 3 years ago.
Right, yeah. And so I think those issues weren't really on the table this year. And so I think people's minds were focused on economics. And if you look at economically, the state's not doing very well. And so I think people thought it's time for a change, and they weren't worried that Larry Hogan was going to affect some of those other issues that have already been decided.
This question came up, time for a change. Well, Anthony Brown was lieutenant governor. He wasn't governor seeking reelection. So I wondered if, considering the track record of lieutenant governors over the years, whether anybody could actually serve two terms or even one term as lieutenant governor and hope to be elected because you're facing we're the sick of you attitude that's out there. I mean, what do you think about that? Is that possible or impossible?
No, I think what you say is absolutely right. I mean, we've never elected a lieutenant governor in Maryland. And so I think that a lot of that kind of malaise or whatever feeling of the previous administration. And so I think that probably was part of it as well. I mean, I will also be candid. I don't think that Lieutenant Governor Brown ran the best campaign he could have been. I think he did maybe too much focusing on why you shouldn't elect Hogan as opposed to why you should elect
that
me.
That surprised a lot of people, including me, a lot of people.
Yeah, me too. And so in a state that is so overwhelmingly Democratic, you would think you could focus on why to support me and then you'd get your folks behind you. But clearly, I guess they were concerned about some polls they must have seen. I know the polling we did in Howard County had Larry doing very well. I think the last poll we had in early October had him tied in Howard County.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew if he was tied in Howard County, he was probably doing pretty well.
I'm going to give our phone number here. Alan Kittleman, the new Howard County executive, is with us. And for the remainder of the hour, you can call in with a comment or question if you live in Howard County or nearby, if you have a question for him. 410-662-8780. Our midday email address, we welcome questions by email, too. That's midday@wypr.org. Well, we're hearing a lot from Annapolis about budget projections, revenue shortfalls, over $1 billion coming up in the legislature. You've seen this before. How bad does it look to you, and what kind of warnings are you getting about state aid for the county?
Well, it doesn't look good, and let me first say that in our county, I've gotten the same kind of budget analysis that County Executive Glassman has received. We're currently facing a $14 million deficit in current year in Howard County, so we need to reduce our budget by $14 million before the end of June of 2015 to balance our books.
What are you being told as an explanation for that shortfall?
Mostly income tax, not property tax. It's not because the assessments are going down. I think it's a lot of it is dealing with sequestration. We have an awful lot of federal workers who live in Howard County and certainly in central Maryland, and also some with the capital gains. There was, I guess, a higher expected that we would gain more money from capital gains than it turns out what we actually did. And so that's really more on the income side, not on the property tax side. But regardless, it looks like, you know, we've asked all the departments in Howard County to give us a plan to reduce their budgets by 5%, just to give us something we can look at to figure out how we're going to get that $14 million, which we are required to do under the charter. And then also for next year, the revenues for next year don't look as rosy as we would like them to be. And, you know, dealing with maintenance of effort for the school system and other things, we're not going to have a whole lot of discretionary funds.
And $14 million in this year and going forward, back to my question about state aid, yeah. I guess it's too early for you to know for sure, but when we talk about state aid, we talk about transportation money, aid to the for the schools, of course, for education, and also the counties now have the new burden of teacher pensions, right?
And we have, as Barry said, we're on the last phase in of our requirement to pay for the teacher pensions, and so that's going to increase. That's a requirement. We don't have any discretion there. We have to pay for that, and so. Yeah, I've already met with Dr. Renee Foose, our superintendent of schools, and members of the Board of Education to talk about how we're going to try to work together to make sure that we can make things happen. We have a tremendous school system in Howard County. It's, you know, people move to our county mostly because of the schools, and we're certainly not going to do anything to harm that. And so we're going to focus on how we can do that with less but still provide excellent education for our students and families. But also with our public safety. We got, you know, between public safety and education, that is by far the most amount of our budget, and we got to figure out how we can continue to serve our citizens and live through these lean times.
It's interesting to hear from you what's changing in Howard County. Well, for one thing, the revenue shortfall is tied mainly to income taxes, right?
Yeah.
Revenues aren't what they were, and you think that has to do with the federal budget mainly, the federal sequestration, which goes back a couple of years now.
Yeah, right? I wouldn't just say mainly, but the federal government is definitely cutting back, and we have a lot of defense contractors who live in Howard County. Howard County, with our proximity to a lot of the federal, NIH or Fort Meade or NSA, so it certainly affects us, and so we're going to deal with that, but that's something that we saw a long time coming when I was in the legislature and we were worried about the recession, and everyone kept on saying how Maryland's doing so well in the recession. We said, well, let's wait and see what happens when the federal government has an issue, because then we're going to do worse than the rest of the country, and I think that's where we are right now.
You know, a lot of people wonder, is it really as bad as Larry Hogan said it was? You know, I looked at that myself a little bit, because in his campaign, he said that companies are leaving Maryland. Millionaires are leaving Maryland to retire someplace else. And he made it sound pretty bad and kept citing various economic assessments showing that Maryland's economy was flat. And you can say we rely too much on the federal government, but I mean, it is right there. It's like we're right next to it. We're next to the Chesapeake Bay and we're next to the federal government.
No, and right? You're right. I mean, we've lived off the federal government for a long time. But as I'm speaking with our Economic Development Authority Board of Directors and others in Howard County, we do need maybe to kind of tilt a little bit, not just focus on federal government, you know, federal, not federal, private contractors who work with the federal government, maybe focus on other private areas. But it is. That's how Maryland is. Maryland is. That's where we're located, and that's how it is, and so we've got to deal with that. But you know, Howard County is an awesome place to be. I can't imagine a better job than what I have right now, and I'm looking forward to working with the citizens. We had our first citizens budget hearing last night. We had over 70 people come out to testify about what they would like to see us fund.
Well, what did you hear?
I heard an awful lot about education. We had folks there supporting the K-12, but also Howard Community College, which arguably is one of the best community colleges in the country, not just the state of Maryland. Also about our library system, which is, you know, number one in North America a couple years ago. So we have a lot of tremendous services, but they certainly cost money. And, you know, what's great about Howard County is our people, and they want to volunteer and they want to be part of it. So we're going to continue to reach out to them to help us deal with these issues.
Do you think you can lure a Fortune 500 company to Howard County?
I certainly think we can. I think that the Downtown Columbia plan, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that or not. But
we've talked about it on the air.
We're going to have a really great redevelopment down there, and I think around Meriwether Post Pavilion will be a great place for a Fortune 500 company to come. The proximity to so much is going to be great, and the way we're going to have a downtown that's going to be vibrant with an inner arbor plan for the Symphony Woods that's next to Meriwether is going to be awesome. So it's going to be a place where people are going to want to not only work, they're going to want to live, and they're going to recreate.
Is this one of your goals, to bring a Fortune 500 company to
Howard? Certainly is. I would love to do that.
It's a goal. It's not a promise.
Well, a goal or a promise, I'm going to do whatever I can to make it happen. And I think that Governor-elect Hogan is going to make it a little easier for all of us as well.
All right. I want to ask you about something you did your second day on the job. Howard County Executive Alan Kittleman, one of the first things you did in your new position was overturn the county's ban on the sale of sugary drinks and high-calorie snacks on county property and at events sponsored by the county. Howard County, healthy Howard County, has had a great trend over the last several years, emphasizing health for its citizens, making insurance available for its citizens early on. Healthy Howard, we've heard a lot about that campaign. This sort of fell in line with that, but you felt a need to overturn this right away, first thing you did, I think.
Well, it was
second day on the job.
Well, it's one of the first things I did, and people, Ballmer's son said it's his top priority. Just because it's one of the first things you do doesn't mean it's your top priority. It means it's something you could do right away without council action or whatever.
It's symbolic. You seemed eager to do it.
Well, I mean, I traveled around Howard County. I've lived there for 56 years. I traveled around there for a long time during the campaign, had 6 town hall meetings, and it came up all the time. People were very frustrated that the county government was telling them what they could purchase on county property. And, you know, I can't tell you how many people have come up to me since the repeal and thanked me. I mean, there are 50-year-old county employees who work in the George Howard building where I work who want to go get a tuna fish sandwich, and now they can buy a Coke. Now, they're 50 years old. We don't think they should have the right to make that decision if they want to buy a Coke or not. It's not like whether or not we're going to have a cafe there and have drinks sold. It's whether or not we're going to allow the person who works the cafe to sell a variety of drinks and let the people make their decision. And to me, it was more about choice. It's not that I don't care about healthy alternatives, and I want to work on that. And I know that there are folks in Howard County, including those at the Horizon Foundation, who want to work on that. And I'm happy to work with them on education and encouragement. I'm just not one for restricting choices.
The only thing I wondered about in this was if a county or a local government or a state government, even the federal government, doesn't establish a trend or try to set a message in some way, who does on this? I mean, sugary drinks contribute greatly to obesity in this country. So, and if public health is part of the mission of government, then why not? Why not let the government set that standard or at least set a message?
Well,
people can still find sugary drinks if they wish to.
Messages are fine, but I don't think the government needs to make that restriction of choices. That's all I'm saying. You know, I'm not telling people they need to drink Cokes. I mean, I don't drink Coke. I drink Diet Coke sometimes. But I don't have any problem with someone making that choice. And for me to tell the person who runs the cafe in the George Howard building that you can only sell water or you can only sell Diet Coke or you can't even sell natural lemonade, which has too much sugar, even though it's natural. I mean, it seems to me that that's goes too far. And education's fine, and I'm all for working on that. I think that's where the government can be involved, but the government shouldn't be restricting choices.
Can we take a call from the Horizon Foundation? Nikki Vernick called in. Nikki Vernick with the Horizon Foundation, which was the public health nonprofit that pushed for this, is calling in. Hello, Nikki Vernick. Welcome to Midday.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me on your show today. Hi, Alan.
Hey, Nikki. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good.
Good.
I'm really glad that you have our county executive on your show today. We're excited to be able to work with him.
Well, what do you want to say in response to his position on the ban on sugary drinks and high-calorie snacks? He's saying that this was an inappropriate role for government to be restricting these products to county for people on county property.
Sure. I think just like we try to make a good business climate in Howard County and to make that easy, we're trying to make an environment where healthy can be easy in the county. And I do think that that's a role of government. I understand that our county executive thinks that we don't want to limit choice. And I think there are other ways that we can influence healthy behavior, and we've talked about some of them with our county executive and his team. You can change the price of beverages to make unhealthy beverages more costly than healthy beverages, or the other way around, make healthy beverages least costly. Certainly, you can change the placement of unhealthy drinks within a vending machine. You can provide point-of-sale education, which certainly our county executive has talked about. Johns Hopkins Medicine just implemented a similar program across its institution, again, that combines education with other ways to influence behavior. Certainly, price and placement play a big part of that.
Okay. So we'll leave it there then, I guess. Well, do you want to respond to that?
First of all, I have great respect for Nikki and the Horizon Foundation. I've met with them several times, and I look forward to continuing to work with them. And also, I want to thank Nikki. She mentioned the transition. She's actually part of our transition team, and I appreciate her being a big part of that. And I'm looking forward to their report at the end of the year or early next year. And we've talked many times. We sat down in her office, I think, after I saw her at an event one time, and we started talking about this. I sat down in her office, and I think there's probably many more areas where we agree, and I think that we should focus on those areas where we agree and try to make things happen instead of a couple areas where we disagree. That's kind of how I focus in Annapolis as well. And so I can't wait to work with her and the others in her office and the board at the Horizon Foundation to continue to improve the lives of those in Howard County.
Nikki, thank you for calling in.
Thank you very much
Take
to
care.
Both of you.
Yep. Bye-bye,
Nikki.
Right.
Take care, Alan.
Take care, Nikki.
The Healthy Howard initiative that started some years ago when Peter Bielenson was out there as the chief health officer in Howard County, and then your predecessor, Ken Ullman, do those projects continue there?
Well, when it started out, it was more like an insurance, like you said.
Right.
And I didn't support that. I didn't think the county should be involved in the insurance business. Hmm. It's kind of morphed into where I think it's probably very valid. Right now, Healthy Howard is focused mostly on getting people signed up.
For Obamacare.
And for Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, however you want to do it. And I don't have a problem with that. I think that we should be encouraging people to sign up for services they're entitled to. And in fact, most of the people who are signing up aren't even signing up for Obamacare. They're going through Medicaid or some other areas they didn't even know about, or the Maryland health insurance programs and things. And so to have a navigator, which is what we call them, is a good thing. And the more people who are getting involved and getting included in the services that they've always been entitled to me, seems to make perfect sense. Hmm. So what Healthy Howard has been focusing on, I know there's a lot of other things they do, and we can maybe talk about that, and I've met with some of the folks there. But just getting people signed up for something that they're entitled to under the law, to me, seems to be a perfect function.
So do you think most of the people who first got insurance through Healthy Howard, that initiative, have transitioned over to some form of insurance through the Maryland Health Exchange?
Yeah. I really don't know the answer to that. It's possible, but I think that there may be some who maybe weren't able to sign up for MHIP or something too, and they just didn't. Mm. And I think, we provide these programs to help our citizens who can't afford health insurance, and we definitely want everyone to have health insurance because it certainly saves all of us more money. I sat on the Senate Finance Committee for 8 years, and that's one of the issues we dealt with is uncompensated care and the cost of people going to the emergency rooms. If we can figure out a way to stop that, I'm all for it. And if Healthy Howard can be a vehicle to help people get there, that's what I would support.
Alan Kittleman is the new Harford.
That's
Howard
okay.
County executive. If you have a question for him, wherever you are in Howard County or nearby, a question about government in Howard County, please give us a ring. 410-662-8780. A short break on Midday. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Our guest this hour is the new Howard County executive, Alan Kittleman, former state senator and member of the Howard County Council some years ago. 410-662-8780 is the number if you have a question for him. I'm just curious about transitioning into this job, Howard County executive. You take the office that Ken Ullman had. Did he leave the office clean?
He did a great job. Left me a very nice note. Ken actually was very helpful during the transition. I met with him several times, and everybody at Howard County government has been very helpful. And actually, one of the things that people think are surprising is how many people I've kept. I really haven't had.
I was going to ask you that about any changes you've made. I know you have a transition team, but I always wonder about this. Especially in county government or city government, you come into office and there's people there, they're doing a pretty good job. They may not be the same party as you. They may have been appointed by your predecessor. How do you assess whether to keep them or not? Or I guess it depends on how many favors you owe people.
How do you determine that? That's not happening because, you know, I've met with all the department heads during the transition. Well, before my the transition team is still going forward, but the transition before I was sworn in on December 1st. And, you know, if it's not broke, why try to fix it? And so there are an awful lot of really good people in Howard County. And so the story I think out there that people need to know about is how many people I've kept. I have really, even in my third floor, they call it the third floor in Ellicott City, most of the people are staying because they're doing a good job and they're meeting the requirements that our constituents have. You know, what I tell people all the time is that, you know, I understand that they're my boss. The citizens of Howard County are my boss and we're serving them. And the people who are up there now are serving them well, and I want to continue to make that happen. And so, you know, we'll have some different policy changes maybe, but on a whole, those folks are really good. Whether they're Democrat, Republican, Independent, I don't even care. As long as they're doing a good job, and you know, I'm excited about that. So,
how are you doing? Is there anything you're doing differently than Ken Ellman?
Well, a couple things. You know, in addition to the sugary drinks, of course. But you know, previously there was a police detail that would drive the county executive and accompany the county executive. I've decided not to have that. I mentioned that to the police chief actually during the transition that I would prefer not to have that. I think if we're going to have the taxpayers of Howard County pay to train two police officers, they should be out there protecting the public. They don't need to be driving me around. And so I drive myself usually. And if I need to go somewhere where someone else could drive me, it could be an intern in the office or a staff person. I think the police officers should be on the street and doing whatever the police chief thinks they should do.
Let's take a couple of phone calls for Alan Kittleman, the Howard County executive now. Randall in Ellicott City, following up on the your repeal of the overturning the sugary drinks ban. Go right ahead, Randall. Welcome. You're on with Alan Kittleman.
Yeah, hello. Good afternoon.
Hello, Randall. How are you?
I really appreciate your show and the opportunity to have this discussion about local issues, by the way. Mr. Kittleman, I actually voted for you, which is kind of unusual for me, given your party affiliation. But the one thing that did bother me when I voted for you and pressed that ballot lock was this overturn, because I've participated in Healthy Howard initiatives in the past, and I think with the epidemic of diabetes in our population, especially in our youth, I don't understand why you think this is any different than selling cigarettes on county property. And I don't want you to try to skirt the issue by saying that state law doesn't allow us to sell cigarettes out of vending machines like they used to. But, you know, if we were able to sell cigarettes, do you think that we ought to be able to sell cigarettes on county property as well?
I mean, this whole issue deals mostly with sports leagues and with the cafe that's in the George Howard building. I mean, the sugary drink ban, the biggest thing I heard during the campaign was from recreation sports teams who have concession stands on Saturday afternoons or Saturday mornings at local parks, and that's how they raise their money for their teams. And they were told they couldn't sell sugary drinks or they had to have nutritious alternatives and different things like that. And to me, if a parent is there with their child, we shouldn't be restricting the choices that parent has. The parent doesn't have to have them buy a Coke if they don't want to. But if the parent wants to buy a Coke, if the parent wants their child to have a Coke, I don't think the government should be making that choice for them. That's why I did that. It's not the issue. I mean, I understand obesity and diabetes is an issue, but I don't think the way we're going to solve that is by not allowing people to buy a sugary drink.
Alan, I asked Barry Glassman about the stormwater remediation fee for Harford County, and he's already proposed repealing the fee in the county for property owners and business owners in Harford County. And so let me ask you about this. I know you opposed the state legislation, the General Assembly's passage of this bill a couple of years ago to require Baltimore City and the nine other large jurisdictions around it, the counties, to meet Environmental Protection Agency mandates for stormwater runoff, filthy stormwater that runs into our creeks and down the gutters and into our creeks and into the bay. So where are you on this? First of all, Howard County has a fee in place, right, for businesses and residential.
It does. And again, I think it's important that we differentiate. The fact that if you have a fee or not does not mean whether or not you're going to comply with the EPA requirements. You've got to comply with them, period. The question is, how do you raise the money to do that? And my opposition to the fee has always been, why is the state requiring, and whether you want to call it the rain tax or stormwater remediation fee, why are they requiring it to be done? You know, the state often gives us enabling legislation.
I mean, why are they requiring a fee?
Yes. Yeah, not okay. Yeah. Why the fee? Why requiring us to set that fee? It seems to me that the state can say if you want to have a fee, you can have a fee. If you don't want to have a fee, you don't have to have a fee, as long as you're getting done what you have to get done. Why does the state care how we raise the money? And, you know, I represented Carroll County and Howard County in the legislature, and Carroll County said, we're not going to have a stormwater remediation fee. We're going to do it through our general fund budget. We're going to have a dedicated funding source, and this is how we're going to do it. And the state basically said, okay. And why not let everybody else do it the same way? And, you know, in Howard County, you know, this will be a discussion I'll have to have with the county council. I certainly would prefer not to have the stormwater remediation fee. Right now, the way we have it, it definitely is more impactful on businesses than it is on residences. We've kind of made it very light on residences, but the businesses are hit very hard. And I'm not sure that's the best way to go about it. But I'll have that discussion with the county council. I'd prefer not to have it at all. But, you know, right now we're going to have to work together and try to find a compromise and try to figure out a way to make it work. But one thing we don't have any discretion is we have to make sure we get done what the regulations require. And the question of how we raise the money should be up to us.
Well, what's the measure of that? How do you know when you're reaching your goals? Is the Maryland Department of Environment going to tell you?
Well, they do. The Maryland Department of Environment is being – the EPA lets the Maryland Department of Environment do those regulations and do those oversight. And they're basically going to look to see how much the impervious surface, how much runoff we have. And I'm sure they're also hopefully going to be looking into the streams and seeing what's the effect on the streams. And Howard County's done an awful lot over the years already to do that. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. But I just – again, the issue is requiring the fee as opposed to letting us raise the
all
money.
Right. So if you go back to the debate in the legislature on this,
yes.
Right, to back to 2012, I think
yes,
it was.
Yes, it was.
Okay. So they probably argued, I'm guessing, not I'm not guessing, I'm this is based on what I remember reading from our own news coverage of this, that the legislature didn't trust that the counties would raise sufficient money to provide grants or whatever was necessary to perform some of these tasks of stormwater remediation.
Well, I mean, that might be part of the argument.
They didn't trust the counties to do it, to raise the money.
Well, the counties are on the hook to do this. And so if they don't raise the money, they're going to have the money some other way. What they're going to do is they're not going to get the permits to be able to develop some land if they don't do it. So there was a stick on the counties regards of what the state was saying. I mean, if you can't get a permit to have some economic development go forward, that's a pretty big stick to make sure you get
okay.
something done.
So you're not opposed to the principle of, I mean, folks call it a rain tax. They ridicule it as a rain tax. I asked Barry Glassman, now that you're county executive, are you going to continue to call it a rain tax? Because for me, I mean, that involves some ridicule using it for that reason. It's sort of a bit dishonest to call it that.
Well, it's definitely a term that people have used to bring more light to it and to make people more concerned about it and maybe to rile up the base probably. But people on both sides do that for different causes.
But you know it's more complex than just taxing rain. You know what this is about. So you're not opposed to the principle of arresting or curtailing some of that stormwater runoff.
No, and I'm also not opposed to letting the local jurisdictions do this. And actually, Montgomery County had enacted a stormwater fee even before we pass the law. So that begs the question, why do we have a law whatsoever? Because the counties could always
okay.
do it anyway.
If you're facing a deficit, do you think you can do some of this?
That's why I'm going to work with the county council on that. Now, I have a county council that's 4 Democrats and 1 Republican, a little different than my colleague, Mr. Glassman. And so, I mean, we're going to work together on all these issues, and I'm committed to being collaborative in all this, and we're going to see what we can do.
Let's go back to Julia in Ellicott City. Not back to, but welcome, Julia, to Midday with a question for Alan Kittleman.
Hi, Dan. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Kittleman, I live in Ellicott City, and I've been in Howard County for about 8 years, in Maryland for 8 years. And I was curious, and this is a rumor, and I'm not positive if it's true, and I hope you will put it to rest. Are you doing away with the Office of Environmental Sustainability? And if so, could you give me your reasons or just put it to rest?
Well, no. Thanks for calling in, Julia. It's nice to talk to you. The transition team is still working on that. I know they have met with everyone in that office. They call it the OES and a lot of other stakeholders. And so we have not made a decision on what we're going to be doing with the Office of Environmental Sustainability. That'll probably be a decision will be coming out shortly. But I'm waiting to hear back from the transition team. That's the reason I have them doing that. I know Ned Tillman and others in the environmental community are part of that team. So it strictly wasn't just one side doing it. We have people from all different viewpoints. And so they're going to provide me with their suggestions, and we'll probably be coming out with something on that soon. But I have not made a definitive decision on that.
Do you mind if I ask you about public transportation a little bit? I'm curious about what your thoughts are on this going forward. Here we are in the entering the 15th or 16th year of the 21st century, and there's still a debate about how much public transportation we can afford or should have, and there's the Red Line proposal, the Purple Line proposal, and I know it doesn't affect Howard County specifically, but you have a lot of commuters in Howard County. A lot of people get in cars every day by themselves and drive and drive. And does anybody in Howard County talk about changing that in some way to so that there's more public transportation available to people?
No question. We talked about it during the campaign. I mean, if you drive through Howard County, you know, one thing about Howard County is we're in the center of the state. We're the only county in Maryland that doesn't touch another state or the Chesapeake Bay. And so you can't get almost anywhere in Maryland as you come through Howard County. And so we need to have good roads, but we also need to figure out how we can get people out of their cars and using some type of public transportation. In Howard County, we're focusing hopefully more on bus rapid transit. You know, we're not going to get a subway out to Howard County for a while. And so so I think that's where we need to go right now to figure out ways in which we can get people. And I've talked to the folks who are developing downtown Columbia, and they're telling me that we can really sell this area to a Fortune 500 company, maybe, hopefully. But the one question they get to us is, how do we get out of here? How do we get to the airport? How do we get to NSA? How do we get down to D.C.? And the question is going to be is, how are we going to be able to have a transportation center there that can get people onto a bus that can take them quickly, not going slowly through all the traffic, but quickly? And so that's how I think we have to focus in the future. And so I'm all supportive of that. The problem we have in Maryland is we have a gas tax that pays for roads and mass transit, and it just isn't workable. And the Senate President and I talked about this a couple of years ago, that we need to figure out a way in which we have some kind of a regional taxing authority for mass transit. Almost every other state does it that way. Pennsylvania does that with Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. Instead, we're having people from all over the state of Maryland paying gas tax to fund our metro systems, and that just doesn't work.
And tolls
right. too. But we just right. we had to figure out a way in which probably the metro communities, and it includes Howard County, need to contribute into making those work. Because even when I was a law student and a paralegal at a law firm while I was going to law school, I would drive to Westview from Howard County, get on a bus, and go into the city instead mm-hmm. of driving down there myself, paying for the parking and everything else. So people in Howard County will use those services. We need to make them available.
Hey, what else can you tell us about the tax base? I'm curious about this in Howard County because there's so many people live there, right? But you obviously want to have businesses, and there are more offices and businesses than there were 20 years ago, certainly. But how has the tax base changed in Howard County, you know, the people you're drawing taxes from to run your government?
Right. No, the commercial tax base, I think you're talking about, is about 16-17% of the tax base, and that's low.
It versus, should be high,
versus residential.
Residential
tax. Is the rest.
Right.
And if you're going to have the quality of life we want to have and the services we want to have, we need to raise that. And expand that commercial tax base. And so the goal is to, with our Economic Development Authority and other groups, to entice businesses to come and relocate. We have great areas. The Maple Lawn is thriving in Howard County, and we have a lot of new businesses coming there, a lot of cyber, a lot of folks dealing with NSA and Cyber Command at Fort Meade. And then in our gateway, we have great in downtown Columbia. So we have a lot of areas where we can expand and have that tax base grow, because, frankly, that's the way you make it happen. That's better than raising taxes, is to expand the commercial tax base to have more jobs. You'll get more tax revenue that way. And, you know, that's the way we should make it happen. And so I'm excited about the opportunities we have there, and I think we can make that happen. But 16-70% is too low. It needs to be closer to 20%, 22%.
And what's the time frame or the clock on downtown Columbia, on the redevelopment of downtown Columbia? What are we going to see there, say, in the next, I don't know, if anything, in the next year or two? Is it going to happen?
Well, no, it's definitely going to happen. There are some, you know, we're working on some details still. There was the downtown Columbia plan was actually passed back in 2010 by the previous administration and county council.
Wow, so time flies. It's been 4 years
it's
already.
It's been 4 years. And things are moving along. I mean, things are happening. But, you know, you have the whole Meriwether Post Pavilion, where we've now worked out the deal where they're going to have a lot of improvements there. You know, Meriwether is one of the gems of Howard County and state of Maryland, the East Coast. And so I'm pleased that now my money is going to be put into there to help improve the conditions there and the facility. That's part of this whole plan. I mean, there's a pathway being built from the Howard County General Hospital across 29 to go up to Blandair, Oakland Mills. There's a lot of stuff happening.
And Columbia is going to have a nightlife? That's what they keep telling us, you know.
That's my daughter's wishing for.
Clubs and dancing and music and all that.
Well, I hope to have a vibrant downtown. Whether we're going to have clubs and dancing, we can talk about.
Are you a good dancer?
My wife would say no.
Alan Kittleman, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's
thanks for
great,
coming
Dan.
In, answering my questions and our listeners' questions, and come back and visit us from time to time, would you?
Thank you very much, Dan.
Alan Kittleman, the new Howard County executive, been our guest in this hour of the show. That's the first hour of Midday. We have another hour coming up. Rona Cabell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal will be joining us for the December edition of Midday on the Bay. Have a lot of things to talk about with Rona when she gets here. Right now, a break for lunch. Thursday's lunch provided by Breathe Bookstore Cafe. Breathe Bookstore Cafe serves vegetarian, vegan, and gluten-free savory, sweets, coffee, tea, juices, and more. Breathe Bookstore Cafe is open 7 days a week. It's located on 36th Street, that's the Avenue in Hamden Hun. We'll see you after the news from NPR.